Yadavalokyase Hadeha Tvaraloka Katara Dvaita Vramyati Kai Karom Yaham. And the translation is, O my Lord, O most merciful Master, O Master of Mathura, when shall I see you again? Because of my not seeing you, my agitated heart has now become unsteady. O most beloved one, what shall I do now? So, of course, this is the topmost manifestation of Vipralamba Seva. And in Vipralamba Seva, you actually are more connected to the Lord than you are when you're directly meeting him, because you're hankering. As they say, absence makes the heart grow fonder. So spiritually, that principle applies too. And of course, when one remembers Krishna, Krishna is present within the remembrance. That's the nice thing. In the material world, if we remember someone, they're not present. And even if we're with them, they're not present, because they're not the body. Like I could say, yeah, I'm with you because you're here, but you're not here. That may come as a shock, but you are not here, I'm not here. I'm the soul, the body, my body is here, but I'm just steering the body. It's like virtual reality, something like that. Like if any of you have seen that movie, The Matrix. Anyone seen the movie here? I'm sure you've seen it. So it's like that. The people were thinking that they were there, but they weren't there. They were just hooked up somewhere with little wires coming from their skulls and some cocoons hanging somewhere. In the same way, our soul is transcendental. Our soul is not actually touching the material energy. But because we are in illusion, just like connected like in the Matrix, we are thinking that we are here. But actually we're not here. The body is here. Okay. So, therefore, materially, you can never really be in contact with anybody because they're not here. You can shake someone's hands, but you're not shaking them. You're not touching them. But spiritually, you can be in contact with Krishna and Guru, even though physically you're not, your body is not there. So this spiritual connection is actually much more important than the material connection. Okay, now we'll speak about Srinivas Acharya. I have some notes here I'm going to read, because it's quite a bit of information about Srinivas Acharya, whose appearance day it is today. His father's name was Gangadhara Bhattacharya, and he later became known as Chaitanya Das. And the reason he became known as Chaitanya Das is that he went to see Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was married, but then he arrived when Lord Chaitanya was taking sannyas. And when he saw Lord Chaitanya's beautiful hair being shaved away, he just like fell into ecstasy. And when he heard Lord Chaitanya's sannyas name, which was Chaitanya, because before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he wasn't known as Chaitanya. He was known as Nimai Pandit. So the name Chaitanya is his sannyas name, given by Keshava Bharti. So when he took sannyas, this Gangadhara Bhattacharya saw him, and he started just going into ecstasy, and he started chanting, Chaitanya, 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 and he couldn't stop saying Chaitanya. So therefore they gave him the name Chaitanya Das. So later on, Chaitanya Das went to Jagannath Puri to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He arrived with his wife, and they got darshan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew what he had in his heart, Chaitanya Das had in his heart. And he said, Lord Chaitanya will fulfill your desires, so you go back home right away. And what Chaitanya Das wanted was a son who was a pure devotee. It's interesting. Devotees, household devotees, they pray for children who are either pure devotees or someone who they can help become a pure devotee, or someone who will go out and preach Krishna consciousness, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was the result of his father's prayer, Bhakti Vinod Thakur's prayer, for a ray of Vishnu. You know, someone who could actually preach Krishna consciousness widely. And so in the same way, Chaitanya Das was praying. So they went back, and when they arrived in their village, this is actually a quote from Lord Chaitanya here, before they went back to the village, Lord Chaitanya said, The desired son of that Brahmin and his wife shall soon appear. And Lord Chaitanya even gave the name. He said, Srinivas shall be his name, and he will be a greatly beautiful child. Remember, this is even before the birth of Srinivas. Through Rupa and Sanatan, Lord Chaitanya is speaking again, I will manifest the Bhakti Shastras. Through Srinivas, all these Shastras will be distributed. Let that Brahmana and his wife quickly return to Gaudadesh. So, in other words, Srinivas Acharya was the original book distributor, original Sankirtan devotee. So we're all following in his footsteps. So anyway, so Chaitanya Das returned to Gaudadesh, and his wife gave birth to a great personality. His wife's name was Lakshmi Priya. And the horoscope of Srinivas was that would be a great soul, and he would be a preacher of Krishna consciousness. So when he was born, he had the complexion of molten gold. Molten gold is like, it's not like shiny gold. It's molten gold is actually not as shiny as regular gold that the gold that you see, like a gold watch or something like that. Actually, Srila Prabhupada's complexion was exactly the same. I remember the first time I met Srila Prabhupada in 1971, Srila Prabhupada was sitting on his bed wearing a gamsha, and his whole body was practically revealed. You could see it like a golden glow coming from Srila Prabhupada. He was gold. This was in Gainesville, Florida, 1971. And in fact, there's some story in New York that somebody saw Srila Prabhupada walking, and they said, wow, that man is glowing. So he actually had a golden color skin, similar to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and similar to the Srinivas Acharya. So it's actually a very auspicious color. You know, here in the Western world, we think auspicious means white. But this, actually, it says when one has completely white skin, it's a sign of leprosy, type of leprosy. So you were so much racist, you know, we think that the lighter somebody is, the better it is, but actually that's not a fact. I mean, the golden is actually the best color. Anyway, so you can be a devotee even if you're white. We have no problems with that. And I am too, I mean, so who can criticize? So, anyway, so then he began to chant the Gauranam, that the names of Lord Chaitanya, that is, the Gauranam is Gauranga. If you chant Gauranga, Gauranga Valite Havi Pulaka Shavir, Hari Hari Nayane Bhavi Nir, as Narottama Das Thakur says, then the hairs of your body stand on end, you become an ecstasy. Of course, he hankers for that day. So then he grew up, he studied grammar, poetry, rhetoric, and everything like that, and he received the mercy of two great devotees, Govinda Ghosh Thakur and Narahari Chakravarti. And at that time, Srinivas's father passed away, and he became inconsolable. He would not drink or eat for some time. And he eventually, went to take darshan of Lord Nityananda. Not Lord Nityananda, because Lord Nityananda had already passed away, but Narahari Saraka Thakur. Then he was told to go to Jagannath Puri to see the holy places of Lord Chaitanya's Leela and actually to study the Srimad Bhagavatam from the great devotees there. So he went to Jagannath Puri. This is a story that's told by, of course, Jayapataka Maharaj with great emotion. And some of you may have heard him tell that story. He went to Jagannath Puri to study with the devotees. And when he arrived in Jagannath Puri, of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already left. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was still there. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami is feeling greatly the separation from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so he went to Gadadhar Pandit and said, I want to study Srimad Bhagavatam from you. And Gadadhar Pandit said, there's a problem because our Srimad Bhagavatam is illegible. The Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cried over the Srimad Bhagavatam, so you couldn't read the Srimad Bhagavatam anymore. so you better go somewhere else and come back with the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srinivas left, and he found another Bhagavatam, came back to Jagannath Puri, and then found out that Gadadhar Pandit, Goswami, who is Radharani, of course, Jai Shri Shri Gandharavika Giridhari, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had left this world already. And so he fainted. So continually in the story of Srinivasacharya, you find him going places, trying to meet a great personality and have these great personalities leave their bodies right before he got there. So he's completely immersed in separation. He was drowning in an ocean of separation, and he was weeping and wailing. And Gadadhar Pandit came to him in a dream, and he said, you should go to Bengal. So he went to Bengal to try to meet Advaitacharya and Lord Nityananda. And so before he got to Bengal, he heard that Advaitacharya and Lord Nityananda had passed away. And he spent the night, you know, crying out of separation, wetting the earth with his tears. Then, when he went to rest, Lord Nityananda and Advaitacharya appeared to him in a dream and pacified him. Then he went to Bengal and met the devotees there. Eventually, he went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's house to take darshan of Vishnu Priya, who was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wife, second wife. His first wife had passed away due to feelings of separation from Lord Chaitanya. And first he offered obeisances to Vamshi Vidhan, who is the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishnu Priya. And then he saw Vishnu Priya, and he requested to have her darshan. Now, ordinarily, she wouldn't give darshan to anyone. She was the most chaste lady. Of course, the tradition in Bengal, the tradition in India, is that the ladies, basically, they wouldn't have anyone see them except for their husbands. I mean, the ladies were very much protected. Prabhupada said that his mother, when she went out shopping, she would have men carry her on a palanquin, you know, like four men. I don't think that's practical nowadays. Nowadays, the women drive themselves in a car, right? But tradition was that they would be carried in a palanquin and then they would come out and do whatever they had to do. They were very much protected. Of course, not like the Muslims, that the women would wear burqas, you know, the little slots for their eyes. So normally Vishnu Priya wouldn't see anybody, but Srinivas was able to see her. He fell on the earth in front of her, and not only that, that she fed him prasad, and she put her feet on Srinivas's head. Now, that's very unusual for this lady whose husband had passed away to act in such a way with another man, but Srinivasacharya was a perfectly transcendental person, so she got the blessings. He got the blessings of Vishnu Priya, who was very austere. In other words, she would chant japa, and for each, some people say each Hare Krishna mantra she chanted, she put a grain of rice. Other people say for each round. I think it was each Hare Krishna mantra rather than each round, because it would have been, otherwise there would have only been like 64 pieces of rice, which is nothing. I think it was each Hare Krishna Maha mantra she was measuring like that. So she got the blessings of Sita Thakurani, the wife of Advaitacharya. And Sita Thakurani was barely alive, and got the blessings of Parameshwari Thakur, whose disappearance day it is today. We mentioned him before in class. And he was brought before Vasudha and Janava, the wives of Lord Nityananda, and also Veer Chand, the son of Lord Nityananda. And he got their blessings too. So this is the point. I mean, last night the question was raised, you know, how do you get Krishna prema? By getting the blessings of Krishna's devotees. That's the method, because Krishna's devotees have bhakti, or have the ability to give bhakti, whereas Krishna doesn't give bhakti himself. It actually comes from Krishna's devotees, so we have to please Krishna's devotees. So if we please Prabhupada, then we get Krishna prema. That's the secret. And if you try to get Krishna prema without pleasing Prabhupada, then you're living an hallucination. You're not going to get Krishna prema. So Janava Mata, who was Lord Nityananda's wife, ordered him to go to Vrindavan to join the other Goswamis. And after offering his respect to Janavamata, he went to a place to see another great devotee named Abhiram Gopal Thakur. And Abhiram Gopal Thakur had a very unusual way of blessing devotees. He would whip them. He had a whip called Jayamangala. Yeah, it's still there. That whip is still, you can still get whipped by the whip if you want. And if you get whipped by that whip, you get pure devotional service. So he whipped Srinivas Thakur 3 times. And his wife said, no more, no more. Because if you give him any more whipping, he'll become so much immersed in Krishna prema that he won't be able to preach. So in other words, you know, don't make him too ecstatic at this particular point. And then he visited other Vaishnavas, went to on the way to Vrindavan, he stopped in Gaya for 2 or 3 days and arrived at Kashi at the house of Chandrasekhar, who was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Then he also met Tapan Mishra, because Lord Chaitanya had stayed there in Kashi, visiting Chandrasekhar and Tapan Mishra. And then he heard about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And let's see. Then he went to Mathura. He took bath in Vishram Ghat. Vishram means rest, the god of rest. The Ghat. Ghat means a bathing place. And then, when he was there, he heard that Raghunath Bhatta Goswami had just passed away. And then also Rupan and Sanatan had also passed away. So he just, at that point, he thought, you know, this Vrindavan is a horrible place because I can't even get the association of great devotees. Which indicates to us that the association of great devotees is even more valuable than a holy place. Of course, the Bhagavatam states this. He says, that one moment's association with a great devotee is more valuable than repeated bathings in the Ganges River. So a holy place is where pure devotees are, and pure devotees purify holy places, just like this temple is a holy place. I mean, I feel very ecstatic, just like I'm in Vrindavan when I come here in front of the deities. I don't feel any difference because this is Srila Prabhupada's temple. So then he finally got to Vrindavan after getting the darshan at night while he was resting of Rupan Sanatan Goswami, who assured him that everything was all right. He should go to Vrindavan and take shelter of Jiva Goswami. So he arrived, and Jiva Goswami had heard about him before, and he offered respects to Jiva Goswami. And at that point, he began to study under Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami is known as the most erudite scholar, practically of all times, not only of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, of all types of religiosity. So later on, he got mantra diksha, that means initiation, from Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who we mentioned before, then this association with Raghunath Das Goswami. As I said, Raghunath Bhatta had already passed away, but Raghunath Das was still there. And Srinivas went to Radhakund, and he also associated with Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and other great devotees. So for 3 days, he stayed at Radhakund and received many, many instructions. Actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we should not stay at Radhakund. We should keep Radhakund on our head. And if you want to stay around there, you stay at Govardhan. So he really advised devotees not to stay at Radhakund. And the only reason devotees should stay at Radhakund is if they have some preaching seva there. Like we have a Manipura temple there, ISKCON Manipura temple at Radhakund. And they're preaching, they're very, very nice devotees. Devotee Govinda Charan is there, he's in charge, a good friend of mine. And that's all right. But otherwise, devotees should just go there for a few minutes and leave, because it's such an exalted place. And of course, there's also these Babaji's who try to talk you out of serving Prabhupada. And they ruin your preaching. Prabhupada said this, if you try prematurely to take to an understanding of Radha Krishna Leela, then the whole preaching movement becomes destroyed at that point. I saw Prabhupada in Los Angeles when he was dealing with this Gopi Bhava Club. He was extremely angry. He was turning colors, basically. And he was saying, this will spoil all the preaching. They're not becoming purified, they're becoming putrefied. In other words, spoiled. So, Sri Jiva Goswami taught the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures to Srinivasacharya. and he gave him the title Acharya at that point. Later on, he met Narottama Das Thakur and Shyamananda Prabhu, who were the leaders of that generation, second generation, actually third generation from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And eventually, after taking a tour of Vrindavan, given by Raghava Pandit Goswami, and this tour is told about in the Bhakti Ratnakara, he was told to take the books of the Goswamis and go to Bengal to distribute this literature. So they made copies of all these books. In fact, there's in Vrindavan, there's one place in the Madan Mohan Temple, there's a Grantha Samadhi. I mean, the Samadhi for the books of the Goswamis. Nobody's ever opened it. I would love to see what's inside it. Isn't it? I mean, it would be amazing just to open that up and see the original, some of the original books or copies of the original books of the Goswamis, and one day perhaps they'll do that. So, because the books were copied by hand. Nowadays, of course, we have the printing press, which is a miracle, and we also have the internet, which is a miracle too, so you can have e-books and printed books, and these books are distributed widely by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees working with the BBT. So, anyway, so Shyamananda, Narottama Das Thakur, and Srinivas Thakur were sent to Bengal with the books. They had an ox cart, and there were many guards, but one day on the way to Bengal, they arrived in this village called Vanavishnupura, and Vanavishnupura was the headquarters of a king who was a dacoit. His name was Bir Hambir. The word Bir means hero. It's a Bengalicized pronunciation of the Sanskrit Vira, which means heroic. So he was the leader of dacoits, and he had an astrologer who told him that in the chest that was being carried by these devotees from Vrindavan, there were great jewels. So they waited till all the devotees were sleeping, and they stole this chest, and they didn't know there was a book there. Later on, the king opened up this chest, and he saw there were books, and just by touching the books, this is also something Prabhupada told us, just by touching the books and seeing the books, he became a devotee. It's amazing. That's why Prabhupada emphasized book distribution. Just by seeing the book or touching the book, you become a devotee. So he became such a great devotee. Of course, he felt remorseful that he had offended the devotees by stealing these books. So he just closed the case again, closed the trunk again. And later on, Srinivasacharya came to his palace while he was having Bhagavatam class, and during the Bhagavatam class he corrected the person giving the Bhagavatam class, and the king asked him, "Who are you?" And the king revealed to Srinivasacharya that he had this chest, and Srinivasacharya was very relieved to find these books, and later on he gave initiation to the king. The king, his queen, and then the king made it illegal not to be a devotee of Krishna in the kingdom. So anybody who didn't chant their rounds, they were just allowed to go somewhere else. So I guess there were no Muslims in the kingdom. Quite an interesting thing. So the king actually became a great pure devotee of the Lord and helped spread Krishna consciousness widely in that area of Bengal. Later on, Srinivasacharya associated with Narottama Das Thakur again, and they installed these deities in Khetri Gram, and during that installation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates again came out and appeared during the kirtan of Narottama Das Thakur, and later on they disappeared. So these are quite some interesting associations and stories with Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya initiated one of his primary disciples, Ramchandra Kaviraj. And he met Ramchandra Kaviraj when Ramchandra Kaviraj was coming back from his marriage. So instead of going on his honeymoon, he went with his guru. So, and Ramchandra Kaviraj associated very closely with Narottama Das Thakur. Let's see any other stories I can tell about Srinivasacharya. Let's see. Srinivasacharya also was renowned for his internal meditation on Krishna's pastimes. Srinivasacharya one time went into meditation, and it was about 3 days that he was meditating on the Lord, and basically wasn't moving, wasn't eating, wasn't drinking, wasn't doing anything externally. And his wife got very upset because he was married and he had some children. But his wife got very upset, and she called for Ramchandra Kaviraj, his chief disciple, to come and see what the problem was. So Ramchandra Kaviraj sat down next to his guru and went into the same meditation his guru was in. And his guru was in a meditation of trying to find some anklets that Srimati Radharani had left in the river when she was bathing. So both the guru and the disciple actually went into the same meditation, and they were as gopis. In other words, they didn't have the same form in their meditation they had in the external world. So Srinivasacharya, I believe, was Manimandri. So they were looking for this. Finally, they found it, and they gave it back to the other gopis, and they both came back to external consciousness together, and they looked at each other, embraced each other. An amazing pastime. Other times, Srinivasacharya went into trance, and he would bring things back from the spiritual world. I mean, he would come back, and there'd be a garland from the spiritual world, or the scent of some transcendental incense or something in the spiritual world. Let's see. Any of the pastimes. This is pretty much the same thing I talked about before. Anyway, so Srinivasacharya, just to summarize, is one of our great acharyas and the a primary acharya of book distribution of spiritual literature. So today is his appearance day, so we remember him on this day. So any questions or comments about any of these three personalities I mentioned today? Srinivasacharya, Parameshwara Thakur, or Madhavendra Puri? Yes, Yogendra.
Thank you very much for speaking so clearly about these highly elevated topics in a way even an adult-headed guy like me reminds me of Prabhupada. And my question, Maharaj, is that the deity that's covered by the Chandan there is Simachala?
Simachalam, yeah.
That was Nrisimha Deva.
No, it's a Varaha. It's actually a combination of Varaha and Nrisimha.
Okay.
It's a Varaha and Nrisimha deity.
You said Varaha,
yeah, well, I said Varaha because he's mostly Varaha, but also Nrisimha.
Okay.
It's interesting, in Andhra Pradesh, this is where Singhachalam is, Nrisimha Deva is like their worshipful Ishta Devata in Andhra Pradesh. I should have mentioned this yesterday, some of the stories. And there's that temple. And Prabhupada said he's so angry they have to keep him covered with sandalwood all year long. They only take the sandalwood off one day a year. Has anyone here been there? You been there? No.
Is that a hobalam?
No, that's not a hobalam. But that's another place in Andhra Pradesh. And then also Mangalgiri, which is a self-manifested deity of Lord Nrisimhadeva, coming from a mountain, and they give him, he's called Pani Nrisimha. They give him, this is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they give him like sugar water, and they pour it into his mouth, and he drinks half of whatever you give him. Even if you give him 10,000 liters, he drinks only half. Or if you give him 1 liter, he drinks only half, and you get the other half. Comes out of the mouth. And then that's distributed as prasadam. So that's Mangalgiri. Mangalgiri means mountain, and Mangal means auspicious. Both these places, Singhachalam and Mangalgiri, you have to climb some distance. In Singhachalam, there's steps, actually, in both of these places. And then there's a Hobalam, which I've been to, which has Nava Nrisimha, nine basic Nrisimha deities. And it's different. The moods of Lord Nrisimha Deva you see there in the different deities. There's Shant Nrisimha, that means peaceful Nrisimha. There's Yoga Nrisimha, he's sitting like this in meditation. And of course, Ugra Nrisimha, like that. It's a very ancient place. You have to go there by car or else change buses like 5 times. It's not practical by bus. And there's no train station there. And you climb the mountain there and you get to the Ugra Stamba, which is supposed to be the place from which Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared. So that's there. And Anyway, so there's so many deities of Lord Nrsingadev in Andhra Pradesh. So he seems to be like their worshipable deity there in the state of Andhra Pradesh. It's South India. Andhra Pradesh is like, anyway, south of Orissa. You know, go to Jagannath Puri, keep going south, and then you get into Andhra Pradesh along the coast. Recently, Andhra Pradesh has been broken up into two different states. You know, they had some sort of political thing. The reason it broke up into two different states is because the politicians wanted more jobs. That's actually the reason. You know, in India, everything's because of corruption, basically. So that, you know, they thought we need more openings for politicians to make money. So we need two states, so we can have like two sets of governors and two sets of whatever else.
What's the name of the new state?
I forget the name right now. I forget, there's some strange name.
Yeah.
But
what did it be, Bihar and Jharkhand?
Yeah, well, Bihar and Jharkhand also broke up. And Prabhupada talked about how that different countries, like India, will break up into different countries. Like, of course, you have Pakistan, you have all these stands like that. Mm-hmm. Pakistan, and then you have Kashmir, wants to become independent. Mm-hmm. And then you have, like, East Bengal, which is Bangladesh right now. They were all part of India. And actually, even Thailand was part of India, Burma with Cambodia, they were all part of India. I mean, the biggest temple, Vishnu temple in the world is Cambodia, Angkor Wat. And if you go to Thailand, you'll see all these different street names are called Rama this, Rama that, the king is called Rama. And then in practically every corner they have a deity of Lord Brahma there. It's interesting. And they have incense being sold from the machines where you can offer incense. Of course, primarily Buddhist now. Of course, Shankaracharya drove Buddhism out of India into these neighboring countries. So, anyway, so that's one of the states of India. So anyone else have any questions about any of these three persons? Yes, Brahmurti Prabhu.
In Ahovalam, the nine deities of Lord Nrsingadev,
yeah,
they're said to be self-manifested.
Yes.
How are we supposed to understand that?
Mangalgiri and Singhachalam, they're also self-manifested deities. And even in Nepal, there's this self-manifested deity, Buddha Nidlakanta. I don't know if you've been there. What happened is the people were excavating the hill. And as they were excavating, this deity actually appeared right from the excavation. And he's lying down with Lakshmi. It's the Lord Vishnu lying down on like a lake. And he's
in Nepal?
Nepal, yeah.
That's the one close to the Nepal
country. That's the one close to the... That's a self-manifested deity, too. So self-manifested is no one carved him. He just manifested himself. And how Krishna does that, that's up to him. But
How
do we know that?
They could have been carved 200,000 years ago.
Yeah, that's true too, and then lost in the mountains. But when the acharyas talk about a self-manifested deity, that's how we know. Of course, the deities in Vrindavan are not self-manifested deities. They actually were carved by Brajanava, the great grandson of Krishna. And they were carved from this stone called Braj stone, which is a very hard stone. And there's many deities that were installed by Brajanava or carved under his direction, like Madan Mohan, practically all the deities of the acharyas were carved originally, and even Haridev, you have the deity in Govardhan, holding up Govardhan Hill, is the presiding deity of Govardhan, that was also carved. I'm trying to remember that there's many deities around Govardhan. Oh, there's the Chaturbhuja deity was also carved, the one I mentioned yesterday. The forearm form of Lord Vishnu near Govardhan was also carved. There's a Nrsingadev deity. It's interesting, I should have mentioned this yesterday. At the tail of Govardhan, all the incarnations of the Lord exist. So there's a Nrsingadev deity that's was carved 5,000 years ago, too, by Brajanava's people. And he's an Ugra Nrsinga. And if you ask the Pujari, he'll lift the skirt so you can see Hiranyakashipu being killed. It's a very small deity, about this small. He's at the tail of Govardhan, and it's a big temple at the tail of Govardhan. Anyway, so the only way we would know something is self-manifested is if the acharyas told us. In fact, we do have to generally be careful of different stories you hear in India, because you hear a lot of stories. And it's said that the only thing we know for sure in Vrindavan is, of course, the temples of the Goswamis, Jamuna River, and Govardhan Hill, and Barshana. But other things, it's just Braj stories. Like if you go, like with Dina Bandhu around Braj, and you ask him, where'd you get the story from? It's just, well, that's what people talk about. But generally, when I could take people around, I try to tell stories from the Goswami's literatures. But we don't really know, unless the Goswamis established that place, that was the place where that thing happened. I mean, like you'll see several Manasarovaras in Vrindavan, Braj. And each place, people will say that's where it happened. And even if you go to Barshana, the people who live in Barshana, they're followers of Ramesh Baba primarily now. They'll say that Radharani appeared there. But we know from our Goswamis that Radharani appeared in Ravel. Ravel is on the other side of the Jamuna. Have you been to Ravel? You've been to Ravel. It's a very beautiful place. Very small, quiet temple. Practically nobody goes there. But there's a deity of Radharani who's crawling, you know, like as a little baby there. It's such a sweet place, isn't it? Very sweet, and there's pictures of Radharani as a little baby, and it's the sweetest one of the sweetest places in Braj. But then, so there's this discussion where Radharani actually appeared, but we know Ravel. Same thing in West Bengal, there's a discussion where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Still people say that, some people say that Lord Chaitanya appeared in the town of Navadvip, near the town of Navadvip. But we know, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that he appeared in Mayapur at the Yoga Pith, we accept that. So, yeah, you're right to ask that question. We don't really know there's something self-manifest unless the acharyas told us. But, yeah.
I have heard that Srila Prabhupada said that in Ahovalam, this is not the place where Lord Nrisimhadev manifested his pastime.
Yeah, he's
that was
another planet. You're right.
And it seems to me that it doesn't really matter so much whether these things really happen there. But when people go there for thousands of years and worship the Lord, the potency is there. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's like an embassy. Or like a temple. You know, you set up a temple and you worship the Lord. So it's a Christian's pastimes are not bound by time or space. So just like in science fiction, you have this thing called a portal, you know, where you can go from, because Ravindra Swarup Prabhu talks about that quite a bit. He was a science fiction fan, as am I. Can't even say I am. Where something you could transport yourself to another region of some other universe just by going through a doorway. Portal means doorway, like port in Spanish, or it's Latin. It's come actually from the Latin word. So, you can say that Lord Nrisimhadev didn't actually appear there, but actually because it's a place of remembrance and, you know, people worshipping the deities, Lord Nrisimhadev did appear there. You can say did and did not simultaneously, which is interesting, because you're remembering the past time.
In India, wherever there's a strange natural formation, it seems like something happened. Hanuman was there,
and there's
always, especially in India.
Yeah, India, whenever there's something different, they claim an incarnation of God.
Exactly. That's right. But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter, because it's a place of remembrance. And Lord Chaitanya went to Ahovalam, too.
Yeah.
And he worshipped Lord Nrisimhadev. So Lord Chaitanya accepted that as a holy place.
Right.
And the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes his visit there. Yeah, your question.
Maybe we Westerners, we have this conditioning that this is the real world. And if this didn't happen here, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
We are very keen on proving things. But, I mean, this is a dreamy, illusion realm. So what does it matter if this thing actually happened at a geographic place here? The significance is more in terms of the meditation on that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's how they treat these things in India.
Yeah, when the pure devotee goes and meditates on a place, that happens there by the pure devotee's meditation. And also, in the Vedic conception of historicity, it's different than in the West. You know, in the West, we're so concerned with factual details. In the Vedic conception, they're concerned with the bhava. You know, the philosophy and the bhava, that's actually the most important thing to them. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says about the Bhakti Ratnakara, he said there's very little historical accuracy in it, but the bhava is correct. So he has his devotees read it and appreciate it and remember it. That's a book written by Narahari Chakravarti Thakur about Srinivasacharya, Narottamadas Thakur, and Shyamananda. And even though historically he says it's not really that accurate, because the bhava is there. So we read for that, because the emotional exchange is the important thing in these stories of the acharyas, rather than, you know, which date. In the West, we try to memorize all these dates, right? In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, but who cares? Who cares what some Malecha did? And Columbus died of, was it venereal disease or something, like, didn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah. Not AIDS, because they didn't have AIDS then. But, you know, he was a Malecha who molested, you know, the natives in wherever he arrived, in the West Indies. He didn't actually even arrive in North America. He arrived in the West Indies. And you know, we're memorizing a date? Who cares? You know, and so you spend all your time doing these useless things when you go to school, right? Mm-hmm. All these useless dates, Magellan, Columbus.
When was the French Revolution?
French Revolution.
Who cares?
Who cares? All you have to remember is off with their heads, you know. Right? That's the only interesting thing about the French Revolution. Yeah.
One of the definitions of Maya, I heard, is to measure, to count.
Yeah.
And it seems like, especially the Western mind, wants to measure and count and nail it down, as Prabhupada just said.
Yeah.
Wants to fix it in time and space. Mm. That, I think that's one of the definitions of Maya.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Actually, to fix something in time and space. And try to control it, because ultimately, if you can fix it in time and space, then you have some control over it. So,
I'm just getting into this now, but we had a discussion about the fifth canto, the orbits of the planet that was after that. So somebody was trying to really get into the measurements and, you know.
It won't work.
And then I read that chapter very, you know, I read a scrutiny. And if you look at it, the actual, you know, measurement reference are very scarce, very few, just a word here and there. What it's mainly about is how the sun and the moon and the different planets represent Krishna.
Yeah.
And Narayana. I mean, it's, you know, for connecting us to see everything in relation to Krishna. But in the Western mind doesn't even, I mean, some Western mind, they don't even see that. They see the other stuff and they get the calculators. And they can spend years trying to get all the measurements.
And they'll never understand it.
Like, see what you're looking for. Really.
Yes, yeah, good point.
Yeah, but when Prabhupada was presented with Western measurements, Prabhupada said, you don't understand. And then Prabhupada even brought like a famous astrologer from South India to try to figure it out, and he couldn't figure it out either. And nowadays the devotees are trying to figure it out for the temple of Vedic planetarium. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is the bhava. What happens on each planet? Who cares about the distance? You know, what? Who cares how long it takes you? I mean, if you're Gopal Kumar, you just chant the Gopal mantra, and you get from one planet to another. You don't have to worry about anything else. That's the reason behind the descriptions of the planets, so we can understand what happens, what the purpose is. But we, in the West, we stay away from purposes. We just want to go with technology. We, instead of answering the why question, we want to answer the how question. You understand?
Yes.
You know, how is the universe structured? That's not important. But why is it structured? It's called teleology, the study of purposes. That's important.
What is that called?
Teleology, the study of purposes. Telios, it's also a Latin word.
Greek.
Greek and Latin. Oh. Yeah, telios, which means purpose. So teleology, when you add ology to it, it means a study, like biology, the study of bios, you know, a BIOS in the computer. So anyway, the study of the living force, you know, the living entities. So teleology, you know, like ontology, the study of identity, ontos, identity, teleology, epistemology, the study of how you know what you know, the study of knowledge. So really that's the important thing, is that what is the reason for the material world? Not, you know, all these different things like, you know, gravity, you know. What is gravity? It's the energy of the Lord. That's all we have to know. I mean, scientists have tried to figure out what gravity is, and they still haven't figured out. I mean, Einstein had his theory as like a depression in time-space. Did you know that? That's
Einstein. Concerned with gravity also.
Yeah, gravity is very concerned.
Nobody understands.
Nobody understands. It's one of the primary forces in the universe. You know, there's the weak, the strong, gravity, and electromagnetism. These are the four primary forces. And Einstein defined gravity as like a drag or a depression in time-space.
And what does that mean?
You know, I don't even know what it means. And I studied Einstein, you know. I was studying mathematics. I know how to derive the all of Einstein's theories, but I don't know what it means. A depression in time-space. Therefore, when you depress time-space in the fabric of time-space, the fabric is used, then two things get attracted to each other. Huh? And the bigger you are, the more you depress time space. You know, in other words, the more mass you have. I mean, because bigness is not the point; it's the mass. And so the scientists are still trying to figure out. You know, they don't know what a black hole is. They try, you know, because you can't see a black hole, because if it exists, it's taking all the light away, because it has such intense gravity; it pulls all the photons, the light. Away. So they have never, you can't see a black hole. It's just a scientific, like, speculation of what's there. They, of course, they have invisible matter, invisible space, you know, all these things that they come up with to try to justify their theories. Yeah.
In Christianity, there was a almost like a split at one time, because a large group of Christians considered themselves literalists. Now, literalists, in other words, you take every word in the scripture literally. Now, I try to figure out what this means in regards to our movement, to our scriptures, and especially in regards to Srila Prabhupada's books. How much are we supposed to be literalists?
Well, this is another study called hermeneutics, which is really a controversial subject matter in ISKCON.
Right.
And, you know, I can get hanged if I talk about it. I can get hung from the temple of Vedic planetarium. or a guillotine if I start talking about that. You know, so like one devotee, Reed Anandamar, has gotten a lot of trouble by talking about hermeneutics. You know, what do you know? When is Prabhupada speaking from the absolute platform? When is Prabhupada talking from his cultural background? You know, this is
talking. I don't even mean the direct issue of Prabhupada.
Or the scriptures.
Like, for example, on some planet there is an ocean of milk. Now, does this now mean that this is milk as it comes from the udder of a cow, or could this be also something that looks like milk? Like in the West, we call it aluminum, whatever that is called, the powder, the white powder.
My speculation, here's my speculation.
Or an ocean of liquor.
My speculation is it's something far more subtle than the gross matter that we experience.
Yeah.
That's called philosophical speculation, not mental speculation.
But that means we're not literalists. And I don't think we should be literalists.
Yeah, it's not the same type, because otherwise it would curdle after a while, and you have a milk of paneer, an ocean of paneer.
Exactly.
Or curds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think just like using logic and reason, we can understand that it's something far more subtle than the milk we experience in this world. So yes, you have to. That's called philosophical speculation. Not that you reject the statement of Shastra, but you try to understand how it's true, and without the literal meaning.
No, you don't have to be so fundamentalist.
No, I mean, we can get in trouble.
We do.
We can't. Yeah, we do, and we can get in trouble by being fundamentalist.
Yes.
I mean, we could. You know, if we were fundamentalists about the Manusamhita, we'd be employing Sharia law here, which is pretty similar to what the Manusamhita talks about. You know, that you, if someone steals, you cut off their arms or their hand. So we don't want to be seen like that. And it's very counterproductive for preaching Krishna consciousness.
If we, but is Srila Prabhupada saying, we're going to say, this is not mythology, this is because...
No, it's not, but... But first of all, the Manusamhita has to be applied according to time, place, and circumstance. And there's also different injunctions for different ages. Like you have Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and Kali Yuga. I think different things apply in different ages.
But, I mean,
and then also certain things mentioned in the Manusamhita or in the Hari Bhakti Vilas may not be the same things that we have. I mean, for example, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas it says, don't eat carrots.
That's
it? Yeah. You shouldn't eat carrots. But the carrots at that time are not the same carrots that we have nowadays. It's a different, completely different animal, you know, plant, obviously. Completely different species. So therefore, you have all these Gaudiya Math temples who don't take carrots. And in Jagannath Puri, they don't eat potatoes, they don't eat carrots, or any of these things. They don't offer to the deities because these different, anything in the ground, basically. So basically these injunctions are made for different places and circumstances, and they have to be applied by the acharyas. And Srila Prabhupada's the acharya. I mean, if we become too ritualistic, we're gonna just take ourselves out of the running as far as being a worldwide religion. You know, just like we're having this whole discussion, I don't know if we should bring this up in class, that part of my GBC zone is something called Krishna West right now, which you've probably read about. Srinananda Maharaj's program, and it's try to adapt Krishna consciousness, the essentials of Krishna consciousness, without changing the essentials, so that people in the Western world can more readily accept Krishna consciousness.
Because yeah. Some of the root is, and that Srila Prabhupada's book, some is emphasizing that this should not be taken literally. Some things that from our tiny brain,
yeah.
Prabhupada said, we cannot conceive it, but it should be taken literally, Prabhupada.
Well, literally, I mean, literally can mean a different thing. You know, literally, I mean, sometimes Prabhupada is presenting a metaphor, or in the Bhagavatam, you have all these different metaphors. I mean, you have the Paranjana metaphor. There's no such person as Paranjana. The word Paranjana means every man. You know, it's obviously a metaphor told, or a metaphorical story told by Narada Muni.
That's the exception, right?
No, but there's many times that they're metaphorical. Or there's a certain point being made, and they're using the story to tell a certain point. And many times it's literal. The Krishna's pastimes are obviously literal. They occurred. But also they do have a metaphorical significance too at the same time, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur talked about the demons in Anarthas. So that you can appreciate it on both levels. But you know, but Prabhupada definitely, you know, speaking from the absolute platform. But sometimes, I mean, now I'll get myself in trouble. Sometimes Prabhupada is speaking from his sociological background too. Like when Prabhupada was talking about women have 32 ounces and men have 64 ounces of brain substance. That was something Prabhupada heard from Professor Urquhart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's from his background. You have to understand that each and every devotee, when he appears, has a certain sociological background that they come from. You know, they dress in a certain way, have a certain type of accent. That doesn't mean, I mean, let's say Prabhupada has a Bengali accent in his English. That doesn't mean it's better than an American accent. You know, we tend to spiritualize everything. I mean, I even see devotees give seminars about Prabhupada and they imitate Prabhupada. It just doesn't go over very well.
No.
It's not spiritual to talk in a Bengali accent. And I've seen Western devotees, they take on these Bengali mannerisms and think it's more spiritual. So we have to be careful about separating, you know, the spiritual from something that's a temporary manifestation of a pure devotee's pastimes.
And language changes.
Yeah, language changes.
In 1,000 years, what is an airship? We know now that an airship is an airplane, but in 1,000 to 2,000 years, they will not understand what an airship is. They think it's maybe a ship made out of air.
Yes.
I mean, even I don't understand what an airship is. I mean, I know because I've read it in Prabhupada's books, but if I just came like now in modern America
right.
and heard him in the airship.
That word airship is already on
it's
the
already a bat, you know, it's that already a past word, use, word that's not used so much anymore. It's, you know, it's either airplane or jet or something like that. Or, you know, if you tell someone a drone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that used to mean someone who was really stupid. And he's just, you know, we used to say that about people. He's just a drone.
Oh,
yeah, in America. He's a drone, you know. He's just like, either drones on, he's just really stupid. He's like, you know, he's a drone. He's like a robot or something like that. But nowadays it means a UAV,
mm-hmm.
you know, quadcopter or something like that or whatever. So the language changes. I mean, and obviously in the future we're going to have to re-edit Prabhupada's books to be in tune with the language. I mean, then we'll get criticized even more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy people have to criticize because you got to edit things as language changes. I mean, if you read Shakespeare, it's very hard to understand Shakespeare. I mean, there's a certain... It's nice. I mean, I could read it and understand it, but it's ancient English.
It's like Chaucer.
It's like Chaucer, yes. The same thing. It's very hard. And some of the words he uses, you wouldn't understand. There's one particular statement in Shakespeare where he says, get thee to a nunnery. Now, what does nunnery mean to you? A place for nuns. But actually, it means, Shakespeare was meaning it's a house of prostitution. In Shakespeare's English, that's what it means.
Oh, wow.
So it's the opposite, you know. So, you know, if you read Shakespeare, you need someone to translate it for you. Or even Bengali, you know, the Sadhu Bhash that Chaitanya Charitamrita is written in, most Bengalis can't understand it. I mean, you know, you have to be an educated Bengali. But the common Bengali can't read Sadhu Bhash, it's a completely different Bengali. So language changes it. All right. I think it's time for prasadam again.
Yeah,
I know. All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.